Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Katie's American Indian Arts, Madison Jazz Society, and Ministry Healthcare. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy of Stevens Point, designing and installing solar systems, highly efficient wood boiler systems, and providing deep energy retrofits to buildings. Northwind's project portfolio is available at northwindre.com.
Welcome aboard, and thanks for flying with us. We're committed to making your flight safe and comfortable. So before we depart, we'll be showing a brief safety presentation. This information can help you if there's an emergency, so it's important to pay close attention.
Fasten your seat belts and put your seat backs in the upright position. We're ready for takeoff.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away.
Today on Route 51, we take a ride back in time to explore our aviation history in central and northern Wisconsin. I'm your captain, Rick Ryer. Our co-pilot today in the cockpit are John Schmiel, the manager of the Wausau Downtown Airport and co-owner of Wausau Flying Service. Bob Wiley, historian and author of Wings North, Wausau's Aviation History, and John Dorsey, Secretary Treasurer of the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame. You can join us, too, at 800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. If you're a pilot, you run an airport, or a passenger, a history buff, or just plain love airplanes, call us at 800-780-9742, and you can also send us a note on our Facebook page at Route 51 Show. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
We're happy to be here, Rick.
You're welcome.
There's quite a bit to talk about. And I'd like to first find out what first got you the flying bug. What drew you to aviation and where you see your role in aviation today? And John Dorsey, let's start with you.
Sure. Thanks, Rick. My history, or my beginning, I guess, in aviation began back when I was an eight-year-old, and I grew up in Janesville, and there was a city airport on the north side of the town, and they were having a fly-in, much like we have throughout the summer here in Wisconsin, and people could get an airplane ride for, back then, the significant sum of one penny per pound. And I jumped up on the scale and was, I think, a little dismayed, as I recall. I think my dad paid 82 cents to get me an airplane ride. And we went up in an airplane, flew over our house, over my grade school, and at that moment, that's when I was hooked. And I can tell you that 58 years later, I'm still flying, still teaching people to fly, and loving every minute of it.
Bob?
Well, like usual, I was a model builder when I was a kid. World War II came along. I found I wasn't eligible for flying and service because of the eyesight, but I kept the dream alive, and after I got out of college and the Army, World War II, I decided I was going to learn to fly, which I did in 1953. And then later I bought an airplane, which was always my dream, and I had a float plane on Lake Wausau for over 30 years. And all of that and my activity with EAA and so forth led me to do some aviation history on Central Wisconsin Aviation. And so I'm still doing a little flying these days, but it's a wonderful activity.
What initially got you interested in writing that book?
Well, I found that a lot of my friends in the various chapters and so forth around the airport had a lot of material that they had saved and been given to them, photographs and documents, and it was in terrible shape. And I decided I was going to preserve it by gathering it together and putting it all in one place. I had no idea at all I was ever going to write a book, but when everybody found out I had so much material, like 700 photographs and huge amounts of documents and letters, they kept urging me to write a book, and some of them were generous enough to come up with a lot of money, and eventually then I produced the book, which really only represents about 20 to 25% of all the material I've gathered The rest of it is in storage at the Marathon County Historical Society.
John Schmiel, tell us about how you first started in aviation.
Well, my future in aviation was determined from birth. In fact, my mom often tells a story that my first plane was airplane, or my first word was airplane. And my first conscious moment of being alive on the earth was me kneeling next to my bed with a shoebox on it that I was using as a hanger and a fleet of little plastic airplanes that I was playing airport with. So I'm lucky because a lot of people in life never figure out what they wanted to do, but I've had laser focus on aviation right from the start.
Well, what is it about flying that is so special?
Well, for me, when I remember as a kid going flying with my dad, and just literally the euphoria that I would feel being up in the air. And yeah, it's the view and all of that. But when you're in the air, and if you want to do it right and you want to do it safely, that is the only place your mind is. Everything else goes away. I describe it as dynamic meditation. And when you get down on the ground, that euphoria doesn't go away right away. And I turned 50 today, and I still get that feeling. Or not today. I turned 50 this year. But I still get that feeling every time I go fly. It's just the most wonderful experience on earth.
Well, what do you see, and I'll ask the same question of all three of you gentlemen, your role today in aviation, whether, you know, John Schmiel with the airport and so on, what is your role in creating more excitement about piloting and flying itself? And tell us about that.
Well, for me, it's my job. I don't really look at it that way. And lucky for me, the occupation that I have is what I've always wanted to do. So it's not hard for me to promote aviation or promote the airport, but that is my job. I am the liaison between the aircraft industry and the citizens of Wausau and the city of Wausau. So luckily for me, it comes natural.
And Bob, as a historian and pilot, where do you see your role today?
Well, I still do some flying and participate in the local activities. I wish at this moment that I had continued to research and keep material together since this book was published in 2001, because a lot of interesting things have happened since that time that could be added to the book. So I've given a little consideration to going back and collecting that material. I'm getting to the point where I usually just enjoy flying, as John says, and frankly, I enjoy flying with him, which I do.
And John Dorsey, your role, not only personally, but with the Aviation Hall of Fame.
Well, I think the most fun part of the job that I do with the Hall of Fame is going out and sharing stories, but just as important, and actually that's what Bob was mentioning as well, is the stories that he's learned since the publishing of his book. The stories that we get told while we're out on the road sharing stories, it's just amazing. Invariably, we will tell we'll give a seminar at a historical society, for example, and it might talk for 45 minutes telling the story of four or five people. Invariably, at the end of that 45 minutes, I'll have six, seven, eight people come up and ask me, John, do you know about this story? Or, John, I've got an uncle that was a pilot or an aunt that was a WASP. And it's those stories that just keep me coming back and keep me invigorated and keep me thinking that, like Bob, we got to write another book.
If you have a comment, a question, or memory about aviation in our region, call us at 800-780-9742. Again, that's 800-780-9742, or send us a note on our Facebook page at Route 51 Show. When we come back, we'll take a look at the early years of flight and the golden age of aviation in central and northern Wisconsin. You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I can go for miles in my airplane, have a lot of smiles in my airplane. I can go up, I can get down, but I can't get to you if you don't want me around in my airplane.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Epic, Mineral Point Chamber of Commerce, and Boswell Book Company, proud sponsors of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, featuring after-dark photographs of North American botanical gardens, illuminated only by moonlight and flashlight. On view through August 30th. lywam.org.
I'm just sitting out here watching airplanes take off.
Back on Route 51, talking about the history of aviation in central and northern Wisconsin. I'm Rick Ryer, in for Glenn Moberg this week. Our guests are John Schmiel of the Wausau Downtown Airport and Wausau Flying Service, Bob Wiley, author of Wings North, and John Dorsey of the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame. Now, one of the integral characters in our history in aviation here is John Swister, and he's credited as being Wisconsin's first aviator, and he's from Wausau. Bob, would you tell us his story. Tell about John and the time that he lived and what he did.
John Swister was an employee of a local family in Wausau back in the early 1900s, and he had a bug on aviation. He thought he could learn to fly. He thought he could build an airplane that would fly. To make a long story short, he did just that. He worked on building an airplane, sort of looking at what the Wright brothers had done up to that point and others. And first he built a glider, basically a glider, which he flew by being towed by a car down around the area of what's currently the Wausau Country Club. And once he was able to master the glider aspect of it, he put a motor on it, and he actually flew in 1911 and was pretty popular around this area. He spent a lot of time in Minnesota at the time he was building all this, so he called his airplane the Minnesota Badger. And he went on to do a few demonstrations and so forth, and he really got the flying juices going around Wausau, and a lot of the local businessmen began to pay attention to what was going on in aviation.
Were there a lot of crowds that came by to see what he was doing?
Oh, yeah. He would put on demonstrations at the fairs over at Antico and all around the area. And they were mobbed with people who would like to see him fly. And he did a lot of that. Eventually built an airplane that would hold two people, and then he would give rides also.
So he became like the first professional pilot, in other words. Is that,
well,
would that be correct to say that?
That's pretty close. In fact, there is a Wisconsin State Historical Marker honoring his activities that's in Rothschild right now, down around right across the street from the St. Teresa Catholic Church, which was also the site of his hangar. It was one of the first airplane hangars in Wisconsin. And that's where he housed his plane and where he flew, because that whole area at that time was pretty barren all the way over to the country club.
John Dorsey, would you care to comment on John Swister's influence in the aviation here?
Absolutely, Rick. And as Bob said, he was very influential. Swister was one of the first to go on tour and do a lot of the county fairs and those kinds of things. It was interesting that in the Wausau paper of the day, they were trying to describe Swister's hangar. And the quote that we have from the paper, as they were trying to describe this building that housed his aircraft, is they used the analogy of a garage. And they said a hangar is to an airplane as a garage is to a car. And we thought, here we are in the early 19-teens, and they're describing a garage and a car as if those are so common day, and to describe an even less common mode of transportation in the airplane. So we just smile and chuckle every time we think of that quote in the newspaper. I'm go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, too, that we had heard a story that John, as he was learning to fly the glider and then moved into the powered airplane, that he was a little nervous about turns. And we have to remember that John, like all the early pilots then, that weren't with the Wright brothers, they really weren't getting trained by anybody. It was a trial and error kind of situation. And John, of course, with the glider was self-teaching. But he really didn't have the turns quite figured out. So we understand that as he would take off from his location there just across the street from the historical marker, it was a one straight flight, land at the country club, turn the airplane around, and then again a straight flight back. There weren't any turns until he got his courage up.
So how long did it take for him to get the courage up to make a turn?
I'm sure it depended on the day and the weather and those kinds of things, but it was a while, quite a number of little short flights.
John Schmiel.
Well, with John, he certainly had an influence on aviation, but I think the seed that he really planted was in the leaders of WASA at the time, because being able to see flight firsthand from somebody local really impressed them enough to realize that WASA needed to be a leader in the aviation age, and they did end up becoming a leader in the aviation age because of John Schwister's activities.
Another interesting character of the time was Jack Vilas, and he was up in Trout Lake in Vilas County. And I understand he piloted the world's first flight to patrol forest lands in detecting forest fires. John Dorsey, would you share that story a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, Jack actually was from a rather well-to-do family out of Chicago, and he got enamored in aviation. In fact, became seaplane pilot. They actually called it hydro aeroplane back then. His certificate is pilot number 6, and that was issued in June 25th of 1913. And he was also the first pilot to fly across Lake Michigan. Never been done before. Flew from lower Michigan over to Chicago. There are plaques on both ends of his flight. And that was on July 1st of 1914. The next summer in the Trout Lake area, Jack was up giving some friends a ride in his Curtiss seaplane. And other folks had been invited to go for a ride or had been offered rides. And as it turns out, that the head of the Wisconsin Conservation Commission was one of those folks that he had given a ride to. And Jack had, after landing, had suggested that, the gentleman's name was Griffith, that he would be happy to fly fire patrols because he could see much farther and spot fires a lot farther off from his thousands of feet in the air in his airplane. Griffith thought it was an excellent idea, and literally in days, Jack became the first pilot to fly anywhere, forest fire patrols.
That's incredible. And now we have the U.S. Forest Service that employs pilots to do that every single day. That's incredible. Bob Wiley, the WASA downtown airport has really a storied history. Known as Alexander Field back in the golden age of aviation, and it was really a hotbed of activity. And a lot of credit can go to a couple of larger-than-life characters, George Turner, John Wood, and later Archie Toll. Can you share a few of your favorite stories about that time?
Well, in addition to the ones you mentioned, there were also the Alexanders, their two brothers, and they were very interested in aviation. And there was a farm down there where the current airport is owned by Herman Radke. And so they leased 90 acres from him and turned it into an airport. He had been cropping that area for some time. And they mowed it all off and started an airport, just landing on the grass, then later putting in some, we call them rotten granite runways. They where they were pointed into the typical winds that we have here. And later on, they decided to improve the airport considerably. So they built a huge hangar, which incidentally is still down there in a different location. They put lights, beacons there so people could find the airport. And they continued to improve the airport for several years, eventually turning over all of their physical assets to the city. And then the city bought the airport from Mr. Radke. And since then, it has been improved significantly several times. That's kind of the history of how the airport developed.
Well, talk a little bit about John Wood.
Well, the Alexanders and other businessmen brought John Wood here because he was pretty well known in the aviation industry. And they had Northern Airways as a corporation that was selling Waco airplanes and giving rides and so forth. So John Wood was the president of that. John Wood was also a long-distance aircraft racer. He loved to engage in long-distance flights across country, and he was particularly enamored of the Waco airplanes for that purpose. As it turned out, after several attempts at the national air tours put on by the Ford Motor Company in the late 1920s and early 30s, he actually won the 1928 national air tour on a time basis type thing. It happened to be the longest air tour that they had in the 6 or 7 years that they conducted the air tour. It was thousands of miles all the way across northern part of this country, down through California, the Southwest, and back up. And it turned out that Wausau was one of the stops in the year that he won. And there's huge crowds here with to welcome him and honor him. He was later killed in a long-distance race from California to Ohio.
John Dorsey, the story that Bob shared about the development of the airport here, is that a typical story for a lot of the airports as they were coming on here in Wisconsin?
Oh, very much so. The norm was for an advocate, whether it be like the Alexanders, who may have had a commercial interest or maybe a returning World War I aviator, which was the case here in Oshkosh, and a gentleman decides to buy some property and develop an airport. The community then will see the benefits, and we then find that the city, in our case, the city of Oshkosh, would buy the airport. It was the same way in Milwaukee, where a gentleman had an aviation business, so he was motivated by having an airport where he could take his aircraft and demonstrate them to potential buyers. And it eventually becomes Mitchell Field today. So it's very, very common for that kind of an advocate, a angel, if you will, to be the spark that starts an airport.
John Schmiel, share a story that you have that really kind of reflects the importance of this airport that we have here in central Wisconsin.
Well, I think, you know, there are a lot of communities with airports, and in the central Wisconsin area, we have more than one. But a lot of people don't realize that Wausau Airport was really on the cutting edge of aviation in the 20s and 30s, and it kind of followed the encouragement of the businessmen in Wausau. And the fact that they got John Wood to be the airport manager was a big deal. And by the way, the parking lot at the Wausau Airport is called Wood's Place, and I like to think that's named after John. But so the fact that the National Air Tour could come to Wausau was a big deal, because in those days – it was like the Indy 500 of airplane racing, and Ford at the time wanted to get into the airplane business and be as influential and dominant as they are in the car business today. And after World War I, there was a lot of barnstorming going on, and Ford wanted to make sure that the general public in the United States knew that aviation was safe and reliable. And that's why they came up with the tour. The tour wasn't really just about speed. It was about efficiency and how short an airplane could take off and land. And the heaviest hitters in the industry at the time – not just John Wood, but a lot of people that are still well known today participated in this event. So it was the greatest names in the industry came to Wausau on several occasions as part of the National Air Tour. So we were not just on the cutting edge in Wisconsin, we were on the cutting edge in the United States. And I'm very proud of that as part of our aviation heritage in central Wisconsin.
In another name, Archie Toll, huge. And his name still rings throughout today. Bob, comment on his influence.
Well, he worked at the airport for a while and then became the airport manager. He basically raised his family living in living quarters in this hangar that I mentioned previously. And the interesting thing was that the Toll family followed aviation considerably. I can't recall exactly, but there were something like 13 or 15 members of that family, his family and beyond, that have the pilot's licenses, and quite a few of them were involved in aviation as an activity for their life. He was well known. He flew. The kids all loved him. The story I remember was that and they flew in the wintertime then on skis with open cockpit biplanes. And I heard the story one time from somebody as he was a kid and he and his friends were running around on the Wisconsin River, which was frozen over up above Wausau. And Archie Toll landed on skis on the river to warn the kids to be careful because the ice might be unsafe. I thought that was a weird way of warning them. But anyhow, he was well known. Unfortunately, he lost his life on an accident on the airport in the 40s, but his family continued his traditions.
John Schmiel, what is the inherent value of a municipal airport, and why do you believe every community should have one?
Well, picture this. I'll use this as a metaphor. You've got I-39 running right through the center of the state. Now imagine that I-39 only had stops in Madison and Minocqua. There wasn't an off-ramp in between. That road would not create as much commerce as it does with the off-ramps that it has. So if I-39 came right through Wausau and there was no way to enter Wausau, that highway would do us no good. Now imagine the sky. The sky has an infinite number of highways. And if your community doesn't have an airport, there's no way to access that system. So when a community has an airport, it gives it the ability to have access to anywhere else that has an airport. And that helps commerce, and that has an economic impact. And sure, there's a lot of recreational activity that takes place because of that, but there's a lot of business activity that takes place because of that. And I think that, it was said by a local airport manager, he was quoted in the newspaper, he said, every airport needs a community community needs an airport. Well, the opposite's true, but it would be similar to saying that we don't need County Highway X because we have I-39, which is just incorrect. All of those arteries are important to the transportation system, and all small airports are important parts of the national airspace system.
We're talking with John Schmiel, Bob Wiley, and John Dorsey about the amazing aviation history in our region on Route 51. You can join us, too, at 800-780-9742. Again, that's 800-780-9742, or drop us a note on our Facebook page, and that's at Route 51 Show. John Dorsey, Stevens Point native Paul Collins was another interesting character. He's an Army Air Service flight instructor, a filmmaker, a pilot for the Air Mail Service, and many say the inventor of the commercial passenger service. Would you share his story with us?
Sure, Rick. You know what? I'd like to go, though, if I can, back just a second to John's last few comments. And a common thing that we say in aviation is that a road 1 mile long will take you exactly 1 mile. A 1 mile runway will take you anywhere you want to go. And I think that's so important, especially with the analogy that John used with I-39 there. It's so true and so important for everybody to remember that even at small airports, that departure from Wausau Downtown Airport will take you anywhere, and it's exciting to be a part of that. Paul Collins actually was raised in Stevens Point, and he took his first flight though in a balloon. It's got, much like you asked us about our beginning genesis with aviation, and he did that in 1904. So it was just about the time the Wright brothers were doing their thing out in North Carolina. And he was a graduate of what's now UW-Stevens Point, and then enlisted, as you said, in the Air Service, and became a pilot, and was a flight instructor at an Army airfield down in Texas, and then later on into France as the war was winding down. He came back, and much like John and Bob and myself, he had that spark. He was excited, and he didn't quite know what he was going to do, but he was going to be involved with it. And he was flying for the Curtiss Flying Service, probably the preeminent aircraft manufacturing company in the country. And he flew exhibitions, and he actually was in one of the first motion pictures to feature airplanes. It was called Flying Pat, and he was hired to crash his airplane into a building as part of that movie. As I said, he didn't quite know what he wanted to do, but he was going to do something in aviation. Well, in 1921, he became an airmail service pilot for the post office and flew on the inaugural flight from New York City. And by 1927, he had over 3,500 hours of delivering the mail, which is just, for back then, it's just unbelievable amount of flight time. He would then go on to pioneer the development of the passenger service, which is what you had said, and then founded one of the first airlines, Transcontinental Air Transport, and they were carrying passengers coast to coast. Ludington Airlines was another carrier that he was involved with, flying from New York to Washington, and one of the first commuter airlines. So, very active guy. He was still involved as he got older. As the war broke out, World War II, he helped establish and plan ferry routes for the war planes as they crossed the North Atlantic. And he was very involved in preserving the history of the airmail service of the 20s as he retired and got older in life. So, yeah, interesting guy.
Yeah, definitely an interesting guy. Dennis from Montello has a question for us. Welcome to Route 51, Dennis.
Hi. I'm wondering, with the early aviators, navigation wasn't apparently easy. Were there many instances where the pilots would have gotten lost, had to land wherever they could, and then try to find a way to contact someone and let them know they were okay and to come and get them?
Well, it certainly was more difficult than it is now. And the reliability of the engines also forced pilots to land where they didn't intend to. Good thing that those older airplanes could land and take off in a short distance. I think pilots still today are getting lost for various reasons. It doesn't happen very often, but they have a lot of improved airports to choose from. The problem back then was there weren't a lot of airports, and there wasn't a great way to get that information around to know where they were. So I think that was all part of the adventure of aviation in those days.
From the historical aspect, it is interesting. We were just talking about airmail service. And as that launched in Washington, D.C., another Wisconsin native pilot was involved in the second half of the flight, the return flight. But the initial flight was taking off from a field, and his instructions were to follow the railroad track that was leading out of town in the direction, I think, they were going to Philadelphia. Well, as he takes off, he's looking down, and remember now, this is a pilot that's maybe has flown in to this landing field once. He lifts off, and he looks down, and, oh, my gosh, there are 10 or 11 railroad tracks leading out of town. He picks one, and as it turns out, it was the wrong one. and he gets lost on this inaugural airmail flight. Quite a not positive way to start the government's issuance of flying the mail.
In the aviation industry, and maybe non-aviation people have heard the term IFR, which nowadays means instrument flight rules. But people that don't fly in the clouds or fly instruments have a term saying, we flew IFR today. And in that case, that means IFR stands for I follow roads or I follow rivers or I follow railroads. So those were the navigation facilities that early pilots used.
One of the things that they did eventually in the airmail service, they had a system of beacons all the way across the United States. And theoretically, you could, if the weather was decent at all, which sometimes it was not, you could fly from one beacon to another so that you knew where you were going and keep on track. That did that for a long time, and it was, even though airmail flying was risky and it was sort of, I've got to get the mail through, that was one of their forms of navigation.
Also, when they were in contact weather or visual conditions, they had a series of arrows that were strategically located across the United States. So the pilots would fly and look for that arrow, and then it would point them in the direction of where the next arrow would be. So they had a series of these all across the United States. In fact, they're discovering some of these from the past.
I was just going to ask if they're still available to see.
Yep.
That's interesting. They are.
I can't tell you exactly where they are, but there's been a lot of interest in those markers lately.
Dennis, thank you so much for your call. What about the influence of women in aviation? You know, we all think about Amelia Earhart, who was, you know, as far as the female pilot, that's what it pops to mind in most people's minds right away. And as a matter of fact, she did make a stop in Wausau. But what about people like Virginia Wittesley of Wisconsin Rapids and Janet Hatch of Eau Claire and later Mosinee and Marie Toll here from the Wausau area?
Well, I can say a little bit about Marie. Marie was Archie Toll's daughter, and when Archie passed away in his accident, Marie and her family ended up taking over the airport. But Marie ended up marrying Lyle Grimm, who was an instructor during World War II, and he came home to help to run the Wausau Airport. And Lyle Grimm and Marie ran the airport until 1976, so they've actually had the longest tenure of running the airport. So Toll has actually been involved in aviation for an incredibly long period of time. And to Marie was a real leader, not just for the Wausau Airport, but in aviation in Wisconsin. And she was a member of the 99s, which is a women's aviation organization. And she's also in the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame. And just to conclude that, to let everybody else make their comments, but her grandson, Dave Kabelka, actually is a part-time instructor for Wausau Flying Service. So the bloodline of the Tolls and the Grimms lives on, and he's actually a captain flying 747s around the world.
That's incredible. Bob? Influence of women in aviation.
Well, we had a lot of women here, as you mentioned. Amelia Earhart was here in, I think it was 1936. We actually have movies of her getting in and out of Archie Toll's Waco cabin airplane. She went flying with him. She did not fly in here, but she was instrumental in talking at the high schools and so forth while she was here and encouraging women to get involved in aviation. But we had other women here, too. Betty Skelton had been here. She was an aerobatic pilot. And They had a big influence. You mentioned Janet Hatch. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, she's the one who set a record for the number of spins in a turns in a spin at an air show in Stevens Point. I don't recall the year, but it was quite a feat to go up that high and make. You remember, John, if it was 50 or 60 turns.
It was exactly around that number, Bob, 50 or 60. Yeah, it was an unbelievable
wow.
number. Yeah.
I've done about two turns. That's all I needed. But anyhow, you're right. It's amazing. And a lot of times you didn't hear about these women at all, but they were very active.
In Virginia Wittesley from Wisconsin Rapids, again, she was an aerobatic stunt pilot, John Dorsey, is that correct?
That's correct. And, you know, it's amazing how we look through the whole Central Valley of the state and women pop up left and right. And it's even more amazing, Rick, when we, today, the pilot population of women pilot population is around 6%, a little bit less than that of the total number. And so these women today, they were really able to stand on the shoulders of all these ladies that went before and have kind of broken through that glass ceiling and have been able to set records, whether it's flying aerobatics or, and I know we're going to talk about WASP here in a little bit, another lady from Wisconsin Rapids, and her name is going to come to me in a minute, but she was a cross-country air racer for women pilots. In fact, raced in more races than anyone from Wisconsin. So, again, Wisconsin Rapids to point up to Wausau and north, a lot of positive female influence in aviation.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can certainly call us with your questions or comments at 800-780-9742. And when we return, we'll be talking about Wisconsin's influence in the wartime effort during World War II.
We've only got 15 minutes to go.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, UW River Falls Wyman Series, and the Minnesota Beethoven Festival. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
Brigadier General William Mitchell, who had had a distinguished war record, argued that the Mahan Doctrine of Sea Power had been outmoded by the airplane and pleaded for a separate national air arm. He contended, in seeking a $60 million appropriation for Army Air Services, or about half the cost of a single battleship, that the United States could begin developing an air force which could hold mastery of both the air and the seas.
Major Richard Bong of Poplar, Wisconsin. Just out of college, Dick Bong entered cadet training in 1941 and became a pilot and a second lieutenant early in 1942. It didn't take long for him to become known in the air over the southwestern Pacific. Soon after arriving, Bong had 8 victories to his credit.
We're back on Route 51 with WASA Flying Service co-owner John Schmiel, author Bob Wiley, and Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame's John Dorsey about aviation in central and northern Wisconsin. You can join us at 800-780-9742. The golden age of flight, which is what we were just talking about, occurred between roughly 1919 and 1941. When World War II broke out, and generals, aviators from Wisconsin played a large role in shaping what we now know as the U.S. Air Force, as we just heard about Milwaukee's General Billy Mitchell. However, one young pilot from our region in Poplar truly soared during World War II, Richard Bong. John Dorsey, would you share his story with us?
Sure. Thanks, Rick. And it is an interesting story. And again, as you talked to each of us at the beginning of the show about how we got our start, I think we should start with Dick's moment where he had that little spark hit him. It was the summer of 1928, and President Calvin Coolidge had moved the capital from Washington, D.C. to Superior. He actually set up his offices in the Superior Central High School. And the reason he did that was because Kulkow really loved trout fishing. And it was on the Brule River where he would spend his afternoons after conducting the nation's business in that summer of 28. Well, each day, emails hadn't been invented yet, probably a good thing, but the military had a aircraft dispatch every day with a satchel of documents that would fly into Superior, and quite oftentimes that military aircraft would fly right over the Bong family farm southeast of Superior and Poplar. And it was from that summer, young 7-year-old Richard Bong said, from then on, I'm going to be a military pilot. And he did. And he knew that it would take about 2.5 years of college. He'd be eligible for a commission. And he graduated in 38, enrolled at the Superior State Teachers College, and then history got in the way. A program across the country called the Civilian Pilot Training Program was initiated, and Superior was one of the 19 locations across Wisconsin that had that program. So Dick took his first airplane ride on September the 24th, 1940. That was his 20th birthday. And 35 hours later, he was a private pilot. And then that next spring, actually it was May 29th, 1941, he was down in Wausau where he raised his hand and became a cadet in the aviation program. And he would spend the next year and a little bit more learning to fly military airplanes. California, Arizona, and then back to California in San Francisco, where he met the P-38. From there, he would go, and I'm going to abridge the story just a little bit because I can tell you a lot about Richard Bong, but I'll say that he ends up in the South Pacific and flying for the commander of the South Pacific Air Forces, a gentleman by the name of General George Kenney. And Kenny was a real fan of Richard Bong. And through a lot of luck and expert skill, and Dick, though, would tell you that he wasn't a very good shot, and his wingmen will tell you that he always got very close to his targets before opening fire. He will have 40 victories. It was the highest success ace of World War II for the United States with 40. And he came back home, actually arrived home on December the 31st of 1944. We'll get married in February. And then was asked what he would like to do next. And he said, I'd really like to be a test pilot with these newfangled jets. And he went to Burbank, California, and worked at Lockheed as a military test pilot, and ended up being killed in a P-80 crash on August the 6th of 1945, which happened to be the same day that the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. So a very fast meteoric rise, a real down-to-earth kid. People will talk and tell you of him growing up. He's just a real nice kid, and but he got behind the control wheel of that P-38, and he became a real fighter pilot.
That's an incredible story. And in less than a minute, John Schmiel, can you share what's coming up this weekend with the event Air Venture Cup?
Well, Sunday could end up being the busiest day in the history of the Wausau Airport. There's a cross-country race which is starting in Mount Vernon, Illinois, and the finish line will be in Wausau. There's currently 72 airplanes registered to participate in this race, and a lot of these participants take their racing very seriously. So when they come across the finish line in Wausau, everybody will hear what's going on. And that event, after they land, will be open to the general public, so you can go out and view the airplanes, and I highly recommend it. It's going to be a wonderful day. Airplanes should start showing up between 10:30 and 11. And also, that's going to be weather dependent. So hopefully we get good weather.
That's terrific. And John Dorsey, EAA Air Venture begins on Monday.
On Monday, aircraft are already flying in. I'm sure you've probably heard some aircraft engine noises sitting here on the north side of Oshkosh. I was at the airport earlier this morning, and it looks like just a great lineup of aircraft. So certainly encourage local folks to stop down.
Terrific. Well, it's been a great hour. Thank you to our guest, John Schmiel from Wausau Downtown Airport and Wausau Flying Service, Bob Wiley, author of Wings North, Wausau Aviation History, and John Dorsey from the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame. Thank you as well to our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Special music today from Frank Sinatra, the Royal Guardsman, the Beach Boys, Gary Allen, the U.S. Air Force Band, and John Denver. You can hear the show again tomorrow night at 7 on 90.9 FM, WHRM Wausau, or download at wpr.org/route51. Until next week, we're flying out of town.
All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go, I'm standing here. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blown his horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could die. So kiss me and smile for me, tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go.